Magical theories have sometimes been used for terrible political ends. To justify oppression, or to argue for racial or sexual superiority, we must be vigilant about not repeating this history of misusing biological explanations of human behavior. At the same time, we cannot be misled by this history into ignoring the most powerful theory of organic life we have, evolution by selection. As the Harvard evolutionary psychologist Steven Pinker has noted, evolutionary psychology provides powerful theories to explain aggression and cooperation, as well as human sexuality and mating. Understanding human mating requires that we face our evolutionary heritage boldly and understand ourselves as products of those prior forces of natural and sexual selection. Another basis of resistance to evolutionary psychology is the naturalistic fallacy, which maintains that whatever exists should exist. The naturalistic fallacy confuses a scientific description of human behavior with a moral prescription for that behavior. In nature, however, there are diseases, plagues, parasites, infant mortality, and a host of other natural events that we try to eliminate or reduce. The fact that they do exist in nature does not imply that they should exist. Similarly, male sexual jealousy, which evolved in part as an adaptation to protect men's certainty of their paternity, is known to damage women worldwide in the form of intimate partner violence, stalking, and occasionally murder. As a society, we may eventually develop methods for reducing male sexual jealousy and its dangerous manifestations. Because there is an evolutionary origin for male sexual jealousy does not mean that we must passively accept it or its dangerous expressions. The naturalistic fallacy applied in the reverse direction takes the form of the romantic fallacy. Some people have exalted visions of what it means to be human. According to one of these views, natural humans are at one with nature, peacefully coexisting with plants, animals, and each other. War, aggression, and competition are seen as corruptions of this essentially peaceful human nature by current conditions, such as patriarchy, culture, or capitalism. Despite the evidence, some people cling to these illusions. When the anthropologist Napoleon Chagnon documented that 25-30% of all Yanomamo men die violent deaths at the hands of other Yanomamo men, his work was bitterly denounced by those who had presumed that the group lived in harmony. The romantic fallacy occurs when we see ourselves through the lens of utopian visions of what we want people to be. Opposition also arises to the presumed implications of evolutionary psychology for change. If a mating strategy is rooted in evolutionary biology, some people mistakenly think it is immutable, intractable, and unchangeable. We are therefore doomed, according to this view, to follow the dictates of our biological mandate, like blind, unthinking robots. This belief mistakenly divides human behavior into two separate categories, one biologically determined and the other environmentally determined. In fact, human action is inexorably a product of both. Every strand of DNA unfolds within a particular environmental and cultural context. Within each person's life, social and physical environments provide input to both the development and activation of evolved psychological adaptations. Every behavior is, without exception, a joint product of those mechanisms and their environmental influences. In identifying the historical, developmental, cultural, and situational features that formed human psychology and guide that psychology today, evolutionary psychology represents a true interactionist view. All behavior patterns can in principle be altered by environmental intervention. The fact that currently we can alter some patterns and not others is a problem only of knowledge and technology. Advances in knowledge bring about new possibilities for change, if change is desired. Humans are extraordinarily sensitive to changes in their environment because natural selection did not create in humans invariant instincts that manifest themselves in behavior regardless of context. It produced psychological adaptations precisely to solve the problems posed by varying contexts. Identifying the roots of mating in evolutionary biology does not doom us to an unalterable fate. Another form of resistance to evolutionary psychology comes from the worry that evolutionary explanations might imply an inequality between the genders, support restrictions on the roles that men and women can adopt, encourage stereotypes about the genders, perpetuate the exclusion of women from power and resources, and foster pessimism about the possibilities for changing the status quo. On closer examination, however, evolutionary psychology does not carry these feared implications for human mating. In evolutionary terms, men and women are similar in many or most domains. They differ only in the circumscribed domains in which they have faced recurrently different adaptive problems over the course of human evolutionary history. For example, they diverge primarily in their preference for a particular sexual strategy, not in their innate ability to exercise the full range of human sexual strategies. Evolutionary psychology strives to illuminate the evolved mating strategies of men and women, not to prescribe what the genders could be or should be. Nor does it offer prescriptions for appropriate gender roles. It has no political agenda. A final source of resistance to evolutionary psychology comes from the idealistic views of romance, sexual harmony, and lifelong love to which we all cling. I cleave tightly to these views myself, believing that love has a central place in human sexual psychology. I penned an essay titled True Love that prompted some of my graduate students to think I'd gone off the rails, but mating relationships provide some of life's deepest satisfactions. Without them, life would seem empty. After all, some people do manage to live and mate happily and harmoniously. But we have ignored the truth about human mating for too long. Conflict, competition, and manipulation also pervade human mating. And we must lift our collective heads from the sand to see them if we are to understand life's most engrossing relationships. 2. What women want. To an extraordinary degree, the predilections of the investing sex, females, potentially determine the direction in which species evolve. For it is the female who is the ultimate arbiter of when she mates and how often and with whom. Sarah Hurdy, The Woman That Never Evolved. What women actually want in a mate has puzzled both scientists and most men for centuries. For good reason. It is not androcentric to propose that women's preferences in a partner are more complex and enigmatic than the mate preference of either sex of any other species. Discovering the evolutionary roots of women's desires requires going far back in time, before humans evolved as a species, before primates emerged from their mammalian ancestors, back to the origins of sexual reproduction itself. One reason women are more often choosy about mates stems from the most basic fact of reproductive biology, the definition of sex. Remarkably, what defines biological sex is simply the size of the sex cells. Males are defined as the ones with the small sex cells, females as the one with the large sex cells. The large female gametes remain reasonably stationary and come loaded with nutrients. The small male gametes are endowed with mobility and swimming speed. Along with differences in the size and mobility of sex cells, comes a difference between the sexes in quantity. Men produce millions of sperm, which are replenished at a rate of roughly 12 million per hour. Women produce a fixed and unreplenishable lifetime supply of approximately 1 to 2 million ova. Of these follicles, most die. Only 400 ova mature to the point where they are capable of being fertilized. Women's greater initial investment does not end with the large egg. Fertilization and gestation, key components of human parental investment, occur internally within women. One act of sexual intercourse, which requires minimal male investment, can produce an obligatory and energy-consuming 9-month investment by the woman that forecloses other mating opportunities. Women then bear the exclusive burden of lactation or breastfeeding, a calorically intensive investment that may last as long as 3 or 4 years. No biological law of the animal world dictates that females invest more than males. Indeed, among some species, such as the Mormon cricket, pipefish seahorse, and Panamanian poison arrow frog, males invest more. The male Mormon cricket produces through great effort a large spermatophore that comes loaded with nutrients. Females compete with each other for access to the males that hold the largest spermatophores. Among these so-called sex role reversed species, it is the males who are more discriminating about mating, and females tend to be larger and more aggressive than the males. Among the more than 5,000 species of mammals, however, including the more than 250 species of primates, females bear the burden of internal fertilization, gestation, and lactation. The great initial parental investment of women makes them an extraordinarily valuable but limited resource. Gestating, bearing, nursing, nurturing, and protecting a child are exceptional reproductive resources that women do not allocate indiscriminately. Nor can one woman dispense these resources to many men. There is only so much time and energy in the world, and those who require a lot of each to reproduce once can only reproduce so many times in a human life. This alone means female reproductive opportunities are limited. At most, a given female can expect to reproduce a handful of times in her life. A given male, by contrast, can expect, at most, to reproduce as many times as there are available fertile females willing to have sex. Women's reproductive resources are relatively precious. Those who have only a few shots at evolutionary success need to take those shots carefully. Those who hold valuable resources do not give them away cheaply or unselectively. Because women in our evolutionary past risked enormous investment as a consequence of having sex, evolution favored women who were highly selective about their mates. Ancestral women suffered severe costs if they were indiscriminate. They experienced lower reproductive success, and fewer of their children survived to reproductive age. Women who were not careful to select healthy mates, for example, could bear unhealthy offspring and expose themselves and all their children to dangerous pathogens. Their offspring would die more often and reproduce less. A man in human evolutionary history could walk away from a casual coupling having lost only a few hours of time. His reproductive success was not seriously compromised. A woman in evolutionary history could also walk away from a casual encounter, but if she got pregnant as a result, she bore the costs of that decision for months, years, and even decades afterward. On the flip side, choosing a mate wisely produced a bounty of benefits, ranging from good genes to a reliable provider. Modern birth control technology has altered these costs and benefits. In places where women have access to reliable birth control, women can have short-term sexual encounters with less fear of pregnancy. And some modern women secure resources through their own professional successes, which can match and sometimes even far exceed those of the average man. But human sexual psychology evolved over millions of years to cope with ancestral adaptive problems, just as our food preferences evolved to meet ancestral food conditions. We still possess this underlying sexual psychology, even though our environment has changed. The many facets of desire. Consider an ancestral woman trying to decide between two men. One shows great generosity with his resources, the other is stingy. All else being equal, the generous man is more valuable to her than the stingy man. The generous man may share his meat from the hunt, aiding her survival. He may sacrifice his time, energy, and resources for the benefit of the children, furthering her reproductive success. In these respects, the generous man has higher value as a mate than the stingy man. If, over evolutionary time, generosity in men provided these benefits repeatedly, and cues to a man's generosity were observable and reliable, then selection would favor the evolution of a preference for generosity in a mate. Now, Consider a more complicated and more realistic case in which men vary not just in their generosity but also in a bewildering variety of other ways that are also significant to the choice of a mate. Men vary in their physical prowess, athletic skill, ambition, industriousness, kindness, empathy, emotional stability, intelligence, social skills, sense of humor, kin network, and position in the status hierarchy. Men also differ in the costs they impose on a mating relationship. Some come with children, bad debts, a quick temper, a selfish disposition, or a tendency to be promiscuous. In addition, men differ in hundreds of ways that may be irrelevant to women. Some men have navels turned in, others have navels turned out. A strong preference for a particular navel shape would be unlikely to evolve, unless male navel differences were somehow adaptively relevant to ancestral women. From among the other thousands of ways in which men differ, selection over hundreds of thousands of years focused women's preferences laser-like on the most adaptively valuable characteristics. The qualities people prefer, however, are not static, because characteristics change. Mate seekers must gauge the future potential of a prospective partner. A young medical student who lacks resources now might have excellent future promise. A very ambitious man may have already peaked and have little prospect of greater future success. Another man has children from a previous marriage, but because they are about to leave the nest, they may not drain his resources. Gauging a man's mate value requires looking beyond his current position and evaluating his potential and future trajectories. Evolution has favored women who prefer men who possess attributes that confer benefits and who dislike men who possess attributes that impose costs. Each separate attribute constitutes one component of a man's value to a woman as a mate. Each of her preferences tracks one component. Preferences that favor particular components, however, do not completely solve the problem of choosing a mate. Women face further adaptive hurdles. First, a woman must evaluate her unique circumstances and personal needs. The same man might differ in value for different women. A man's willingness to do a lot of direct childcare, for example, might be more valuable to a woman who does not have kin around to help her than to a woman whose mother, sisters, aunts, and uncles eagerly participate. The dangers of choosing a man with a volatile temper may be greater for a woman who is an only child than for a woman with strong brothers and sisters around to protect her. The value of potential mates, in short, depends on the individualized, personalized, and contextualized perspective of the woman doing the choosing. In selecting a mate, women must identify and correctly evaluate the cues that signal whether a man indeed possesses a particular resource. The assessment problem becomes especially difficult in domains where men are apt to deceive women. Yes, men sometimes lie. Some pretend to have higher status than they actually possess. Some feign greater commitment than they are actually willing to give. Finally, women face the problem of integrating their knowledge about a prospective mate. Suppose that one man is generous, but emotionally unstable. Another man is emotionally stable, but stingy. Which man should a woman choose? Choosing a mate calls upon psychological mechanisms that make it possible to evaluate the relevant attributes and give each its appropriate weight in the whole. There are trade-offs. A masculine man might possess good genes, but may be more likely to cheat. Some attributes are granted more weight than others in the final decision about whether to choose or reject a particular man. One of these highly weighted components is the man's resources. Resource potential. The evolution of the female preference for males who offer resources may be the most ancient and pervasive basis for female choice in the animal kingdom. Consider the gray shrike, a bird that lives in the Negev desert of Israel. Just before the start of the breeding season, male shrikes begin amassing caches of 90 to 120 items of edible prey, such as snails, and other useful objects such as feathers and pieces of cloth. They impale these items on thorns and other pointed projections within their territory. Females look over the available males and prefer to mate with those with the largest caches. When the biologist, Reuven Yosef, arbitrarily removed portions of some males' caches and added edible objects to others, females shifted to the males with the larger bounties. Females avoided entirely males without resources, consigning them to bachelorhood. Wherever females show a mate preference, the male's resources are often, though not always, the key criterion. Among humans, the evolution of women's preference for a committed mate with resources would have required three preconditions. First, resources would have had to be accruable, defensible, and controllable by men during human evolutionary history. Second, men would have had to differ from each other in their holdings or skill at resource acquisition, as well as in their willingness to invest those holdings in a woman and her children. If all men had possessed equal potential to acquire resources and shown an equal willingness to commit them, selection could not have favored a female preference for these qualities. Constants do not count in mating decisions. And third, the advantages of committing to one man would have had to outweigh the advantages of being with several men. Among humans, these conditions are easily met. Territory and tools, to name just two resources, are acquired, defended, monopolized, and controlled by men worldwide. Men vary tremendously in the quantity of resources they command, from the poverty of a street bum to the riches of Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, and Warren Buffett. Ancestral men similarly differed in their resource acquisition abilities, such as their hunting skills, a key ancestral analog of resource potential. Men today also differ widely in how willing they are to invest their time and resources in long-term mateships. Some men are cads, preferring to mate with many women while investing little in each. Other men are dads, who prefer to channel all of their resources to one woman and her children. Women, over human evolutionary history, could often garner far more resources for their children through a single spouse than through several temporary sex partners. Men provide their wives and children with resources to an extent that is unprecedented among primates. Among most other primate species, for example, females must rely solely on their own efforts to acquire food because males usually do not share food with their mates. Men, in contrast, provide food, find shelter, and defend territory. Men protect children. They tutor them in the art of hunting, the craft of war, the strategies of social influence, and even the game of mating. They transfer status, aiding offspring in forming reciprocal alliances later in life. These many benefits are unlikely to be secured by a woman from a casual sex partner. Not all potential husbands can confer all of these benefits, but over thousands of generations, when some men were able to provide some of these benefits, women gained a powerful advantage by preferring them as mates. So, the stage was set for women to evolve a preference for men with resources. But women needed cues that signified a man's possession of those resources. These cues might have been indirect, such as personality characteristics that signaled a man's upward mobility. They might have been physical, such as a man's athletic ability or health. They might have included reputational information, such as the esteem in which a man was held by his peers. Economic resources, however, provided the most direct cue. Women's current mate preferences provide a window for viewing our mating past, just as our fear of snakes and heights provides a window for viewing ancestral hazards. Evidence from dozens of studies documents that modern American women do indeed value economic resources in mates substantially more than men do in mates. In a study conducted in 1939, for example, American men and women rated 18 characteristics for their desirability in a mate or marriage partner, ranging from irrelevant to indispensable. Women did not view good financial prospects as absolutely indispensable, but they rated them as important. Men rated them as merely desirable, but not very important. Women in 1939 valued good financial prospects in a mate about twice as highly as men, and this finding was replicated in 1956 and again in 1967. The sexual revolution of the late 1960s and early 1970s failed to change this gender difference. In an attempt to replicate the studies from earlier decades, I surveyed 1,491 Americans in the mid-1980s using the same questionnaire. Women and men from Massachusetts, Michigan, Texas, and California rated 18 personal characteristics for their value in a marriage partner. As in the previous decades, women still valued good financial prospects in a mate roughly twice as much as men did. Nor did these gender differences diminish in the 1990s, or the 2000s, or in published studies through the year 2015. The premium that women place on economic resources has been revealed in many contexts. The psychologist Douglas Kenrick and his colleagues devised a clever method for revealing how much people value different attributes in a marriage partner. They asked men and women to indicate the minimum percentiles of each characteristic that they would find acceptable. American college women indicated that their minimum acceptable percentile for a husband on earning capacity was the 70th percentile. That is, they preferred a man who earned more than 70% of all other men. Whereas men's minimum acceptable percentile for a woman's earning capacity was only the 40th percentile. In research conducted over the past decade, Norman Lee has consistently found that women see resources in a mate as a necessity rather than a luxury. Personal ads in newspapers, in magazines, and on online dating sites confirm that women who are actually in the marriage market desire financial resources. A study of 1,111 personal ads found that female advertisers seek financial resources roughly 11 times as often as male advertisers do. In short, sex differences in a preference for resources are not limited to college students and are not bound by the method of inquiry. Nor are these female preferences restricted to the United States, or to Western societies, or to capitalist countries. The international study on choosing a mate that I conducted with my colleagues documented the universality of women's preferences. We investigated populations in 37 cultures on 6 continents and 5 islands that varied on many demographic and cultural characteristics. The participants came from nations that practice polygyny, such as Nigeria and Zambia, as well as from nations that are more monogamous, such as Spain and Canada. The countries included those in which living together is as common as marriage, such as Sweden and Finland, as well as countries in which living together without marriage is frowned upon, such as Bulgaria and Greece. In all, the study sampled 10,047 individuals. Male and female participants in the study rated the importance of 18 characteristics in a potential mate or marriage partner on a scale from unimportant to indispensable. Women across all continents, all economic systems, including socialism and communism, all ethnic groups, all religious groups, and all systems of mating, from intense polygyny to presumptive monogamy, placed more value than men did on good financial prospects. Overall, women valued financial resources about 100% more than men did, or roughly twice as much. There were some cultural variations. Women from Nigeria, Zambia, India, Indonesia, Iran, Japan, Taiwan, Colombia, and Venezuela valued good financial prospects a bit more than women from South Africa's Zulu communities, the Netherlands, and Finland. In Japan, for example, women valued good financial prospects roughly 150% more than men did, whereas women from the Netherlands deemed financial prospects only 36% more important than their male counterparts did. Less than women from any other country. Nonetheless, the sex difference remained invariant. Women worldwide desired financial resources in a marriage partner more than men. These findings provided the first extensive cross-cultural evidence supporting the evolutionary basis for the psychology of human mating. They have become established as among the most robustly documented gender differences in the entire field of psychology. Because ancestral women faced the tremendous burdens of internal fertilization, a 9-month gestation, and lactation, they would have benefited tremendously by selecting mates who possessed resources. These preferences helped our ancestral mothers solve the adaptive problems of survival and reproduction for themselves and their children. Social status. An examination of traditional hunter-gatherer societies, which are our closest guide to what ancestral conditions were probably like, suggests that ancestral men had clearly defined status hierarchies. In traditional societies today, resources flow freely to those at the top and trickle down slowly to those at the bottom. Traditional tribes, such as the Tiwi, an Aboriginal group residing on two small islands off the coast of northern Australia, the Yanomamo of Venezuela, the Aceh of Paraguay, and the Kung tribe of Botswana, are replete with people described as head men or big men, who wield great power and enjoy the resource privileges of prestige. An ancestral man's social status provided a powerful clue to his possession of resources. Henry Kissinger once remarked that power is a potent aphrodisiac. Women desire men who command a high position in society, because social status is a universal cue to the control of resources. Along with status come better food, more abundant territory, and superior health care. Greater social status bestows on children social opportunities missed by the children of lower-ranked males. Male children in families of higher social status worldwide typically have access to more mates and better quality mates. In one study of 186 societies, ranging from the Mbuti Pygmies of Africa to the Aleut of Alaska, high-status men invariably had greater wealth and more wives than lower-status men, and their children were better nourished. Women in the United States express clear preferences for potential mates who have high social status or a high-status profession, qualities that are viewed as only slightly less important than good financial prospects. In the 1990s, using a rating scale from irrelevant or unimportant to indispensable, my colleagues and I asked participants from Massachusetts, Michigan, Texas, and California to rate the importance of a potential mate's social status. Women rated it as between important and indispensable, whereas men rated it as merely desirable but not very important. In a study of 5,000 college students, women listed status, prestige, rank, position, power, standing, station, and high place as important, considerably more frequently than men did. David Schmidt and I conducted a study of casual and committed mating to discover which characteristics people especially value in potential spouses as contrasted with potential sex partners. Several hundred individuals rated 67 characteristics for their desirability or undesirability in the short or long term. Women judged the likelihood of success in a profession and the possession of a promising career to be highly desirable in a spouse. Significantly, they saw these cues to future status as more desirable in potential spouses than in casual sex partners. American women also place great value on education and professional degrees in mates, characteristics that are strongly linked with social status. Women rate lack of education as highly undesirable in a potential husband. The cliche that women prefer to marry doctors, lawyers, professors, successful entrepreneurs, and other professionals seems to correspond with reality. Women shun men who are easily dominated by other men or who fail to command the respect of the group. Women's desire for status shows up in everyday life. A colleague overheard a conversation among four women at a restaurant. They were all complaining that there were no eligible men around. Yet, these women were surrounded by male waiters, none of whom was wearing a wedding ring. Waiters, who do not have a high-status occupation, were apparently not even considered by these women. What the women really meant was not that there were no eligible men, but that there were no eligible men of acceptable social status. Women on the mating market look for eligible men. The word eligible is a euphemism for not having his resources already committed elsewhere. The frequency with which the word appears in the combination eligible bachelor reveals the mating desires of women. When women append an adverb to this phrase, it becomes most eligible bachelor, referring not to the man's eligibility, but rather to his social status and the magnitude of his resources. It is code for the highest status, most resource-laden, unattached man around. Most homeless and jobless men are eligible in the sense that they are available as mates, but most women are not interested in them. The importance that women grant to social status in mates is not limited to the United States or even to capitalist countries. In the vast majority of the 37 cultures included in the International Study on Choosing a Mate, women valued social status more than men in a prospective mate. In both communist and socialist countries, among both Croatians and Chinese, among both Christians and Muslims, in both the tropics and the northern climes. For example, women valued status 63% more than men in Taiwan, 30% more in Zambia, 38% more in Germany, and 40% more in Brazil. Women see social status as a necessity more than as a luxury when it comes to long-term mating. Because hierarchies are universal features among human groups and resources flow to those who rise in the hierarchy, women solve the adaptive problem of acquiring resources in part by preferring men who are high in status. Social status gives a woman a strong indicator of the ability of a man to invest in her and her children. The scientific evidence across many cultures supports the evolutionary prediction that women are attuned to this cue to the acquisition of resources. Women worldwide prefer to marry up. Those women in our evolutionary past who failed to marry up tended to be less able to provide for themselves and their children. Age. The age of a man also provides an important cue to his access to resources. Just as young male baboons must mature before they can enter the upper ranks in the baboon social hierarchy, human male adolescents and young men rarely command the respect, status, or position of more mature, older men. This pattern reaches an extreme among the Tiwi tribe, a gerontocracy in which the very old men wield most of the power, have most of the prestige, and control the mating system through complex networks of alliances. Even in American culture, status and wealth tend to accumulate with increasing age. In all 37 cultures in the International Study on Choosing a Mate, women preferred men who were older than they were. Averaged over all cultures, women preferred men who were roughly 3.5 years older. The smallest preferred age difference was seen in French-Canadian women who sought husbands who were not quite 2 years older, and the largest was found among Iranian women who sought husbands who were more than 5 years older. The worldwide average age difference between actual brides and grooms is 3 years, suggesting that women's marriage decisions often match their mating preferences. To understand why women value older mates, we must examine what changes with age. One of the most consistent changes is access to resources. In contemporary Western societies, income generally increases with age. 30-year-old American men, for example, make more money than men who are 20, and men who are 40 make more than 30-year-olds. These trends are not limited to the Western world. Among traditional non-modernized societies, older men have more social status. Among the Tiwi tribe, men are typically at least 30 years of age before they acquire enough social status to acquire a first wife. Rarely does a Tiwi man under the age of 40 attain enough status to acquire more than one wife. Older age, resources, and status are coupled across cultures. In traditional societies, part of this linkage may be related to physical strength and hunting prowess. Physical strength increases in men as they get older, peaking in their late 20s and early 30s. Anthropologists find that hunting ability peaks when a man is in his 30s, at which point his slight decline in physical prowess is more than compensated for by his increased knowledge, patience, skill, and wisdom. Women's preference for older men may stem from our hunter-gatherer ancestors, for whom the resources derived from hunting were critical to survival and reproduction. Women may prefer older men for reasons other than tangible resources. Older men are likely to be more mature, more stable, and more reliable in their provisioning. Within the United States, for example, men become somewhat more emotionally stable, more conscientious, and more dependable as they grow older, at least up through the age of 30. In a study of women's mate preferences, one woman noted that older men are better looking because you can talk to them about serious concerns. Younger men are silly and not very serious about life. the status potential of men becomes clearer with increasing age. Women who prefer older men are in a better position to gauge how high they are likely to rise. 20-year-old women in all 37 cultures in the international study typically preferred to marry men only a few years older, not substantially older, in spite of the fact that men's financial resources generally do not peak until their 40s or 50s. One reason young women are not drawn to substantially older men may be that older men have a higher risk of dying and hence are less likely to be around to continue contributing to the provisioning and protection of children. The potential incompatibility created by a large age discrepancy may lead to strife, thus increasing the odds of divorce. Moreover, men's sperm quality tends to degrade somewhat with advanced age, which can lead to more birth defects. For these reasons, young women may be drawn more to men a few years older who have considerable promise than to substantially older men who already have attained a higher position, but have a less certain future and possibly poorer sperm quality. Not all women, of course, select older men. Some choose younger men. A study of a small Chinese village found that women who were 17 or 18 sometimes married men who were only 14 or 15. The conditions in which this occurred, however, were highly circumscribed, in that all the men were already wealthy, came from a high-status family, and had secure expectations through inheritance. Apparently, the preference for slightly older men can be overridden when the man possesses other powerful cues to status and resources, and when his resource expectations are guaranteed. Other exceptions occur when women mate with substantially younger men. Many of these cases occur not because of strong preferences by women for younger men, but rather because both older women and younger men lack bargaining power on the mating market. Older women often cannot secure the attentions of high-status men, and so must settle for younger men who themselves have not acquired much status or value as mates. Among the Tiwi, for example, a young man's first wife is typically an older woman, sometimes older by decades, because older women are all he is able to secure with his relatively low status. Still other exceptions occur among women who already have high status and plentiful resources of their own and then take up with much younger men. Mariah Carey, Madonna, and Cher are striking celebrity examples. They became involved with men who were years or even decades younger. But these cases are relatively rare, because most women with resources prefer to mate with men at least as rich in resources as they are, and preferably more so. Women may have casual sex with the proverbial pool boy, or hook up through an online dating app with a younger man, but typically they seek an older man when they decide to settle down for a committed long-term mateship. All these cues, economic resources, social status, and older age, add up to one thing: the ability of a man to acquire and control resources that women can use for themselves and for their children. A long history of evolution by selection has fashioned the way in which women look at men as success objects, but the possession of resources is not enough. Women also need men who possess traits that are likely to lead to the sustained acquisition of resources over time. In cultures where people marry young, often the economic capacity of a man cannot be evaluated directly, but must be inferred from observable cues. Indeed, in hunter-gatherer groups that lack a cash economy, the target of selection cannot be financial resources per se. Among the Tiwi tribe, for example, young men are scrutinized carefully by both women and older men to evaluate which ones are rising stars, destined to acquire status and resources, and which are likely to remain in the slow lane, based in part on their personality. The young men are evaluated for their promise, the key signs being good hunting skills, good fighting skills, and especially a strong proclivity to ascend the hierarchy of tribal power and influence. Women in all cultures, past and present, can select men for their apparent ability to accrue future resources based on certain personality characteristics. And women who value the personality characteristics likely to lead to status and sustained resource acquisition are far better off than women who ignore these vital characterological cues. Ambition and industriousness. Which tactics do people use to elevate their position in status hierarchies? My lab discovered 26 distinct tactics, including deception, social networking, sexual favors, education, and industriousness. The industriousness tactic included actions such as putting in extra time and effort at work, managing time efficiently, prioritizing goals, and working hard to impress others. Among all the tactics, industriousness proved to be the best predictor of past and anticipated income and promotions. Those who worked hard achieved higher levels of education and higher annual salaries, and they anticipated greater salaries and promotions than those who failed to work hard. Findings as solid in Norway as in the United States. Industrious and ambitious men secure a higher occupational status than lazy, unmotivated men do. American women, far more often than men, desire mates who enjoy their work, show career orientation, demonstrate industriousness, and display ambition. The 852 single American women and 100 married American women in the 37 Culture study unanimously rated ambition and industriousness as important or indispensable. Women regard men who lack ambition as extremely undesirable, whereas men view the lack of ambition in a wife as neither desirable nor undesirable. Women are likely to discontinue a long-term relationship with a man if he loses his job, lacks career goals, or shows a lazy streak. Women in the overwhelming majority of cultures similarly value ambition and industry more than men do, typically rating it as between important and indispensable. In our study, for example, Taiwanese women rated ambition and industriousness as 26% more important than men did. Women from Bulgaria rated it as 29% more important, and women from Brazil rated it as 30% more important. The cross-cultural and cross-generational evidence supports the key evolutionary expectation that women have evolved a preference for men who show signs of the ability to acquire resources and a disdain for men who lack ambition. Hard work and ambition, however, are not the only available cues to potential resources. Two others, dependability and stability, provide critical information about how steady or erratic these resources will be. Dependability and stability. Among the 18 characteristics rated in the 37 Culture study, the second and third most highly valued characteristics were a dependable character and emotional stability or maturity. In 21 out of 37 cultures, men and women had the same preference for dependability in a partner. Of the 16 cultures where there was a gender difference, women in 15 of these cultures valued dependability more than men did. Averaged across all 37 cultures, women rated dependable character 2.69, where a 3.0 signifies indispensable. Men rated it nearly as important, with an average of 2.5. In the case of emotional stability or maturity, the sexes differed more. Women in 23 cultures valued this quality significantly more than men did. In the remaining 14 cultures, men and women valued emotional stability equally. Averaging across all cultures, women gave this quality a 2.68, whereas men gave it a 2.47. These characteristics may possess such a great value worldwide because they are reliable signals that resources will be provided consistently over time. Undependable people, in contrast, provide erratically and inflict heavy costs on their mates. In a study of newlywed couples, my lab found that emotionally unstable men were especially costly to women. They tended to be self-centered, to monopolize shared resources, and to be possessive, monopolizing much of the time of their wives. These men showed higher than average sexual jealousy, becoming enraged when their wives even talked with someone else, as well as dependency. They would insist that their mates provide for all of their needs. With a tendency to being abusive, both verbally and physically, they also displayed inconsiderateness, such as by failing to show up on time. Emotionally unstable men were also moodier than their more stable counterparts, sometimes crying after minor setbacks, suggesting a further diversion of their time and resources was their tendency to have more affairs than average. All of these costs indicate that emotionally unstable mates will absorb their partner's time and resources, divert their own time and resources elsewhere, and fail to channel resources consistently over time. Dependability and stability are personal qualities that signal increased likelihood that a woman's resources will not be drained by the man. The unpredictable aspects of emotionally unstable men inflict additional costs by impeding solutions to critical adaptive problems. The erratic supply of resources can wreak havoc with accomplishing the goals required for survival and reproduction. Meat that is suddenly not available because an undependable mate decided at the last minute to take a nap rather than go on the hunt is a resource that was counted on but not delivered. Its absence creates problems for nourishment and sustenance. Resources prove most beneficial when they are predictable. Erratically provided resources may even go to waste when the needs they were intended to meet are met through other, more costly means. Resources that are supplied predictably can be more efficiently allocated to the many adaptive hurdles that must be overcome in everyday life. Women place a premium on dependability and emotional stability to avoid incurring these costs and to reap the benefits that a mate can provide to them consistently over time. In ancestral times, women who chose stable, dependable men had a greater likelihood of ensuring the man's ability to acquire and maintain resources for use by them and their children. Women who made these wise choices avoided many of the costs inflicted by undependable and unstable men. Intelligence. Dependability, emotional stability, industriousness, and ambition are not the only personal qualities that signal the acquisition and steadiness of resources. The ephemeral quality of intelligence provides another important cue. No one knows for sure what intelligence tests measure, but there is clear evidence of what high scorers can do. Intelligence is a good predictor of the possession of economic resources within the United States. People who test high go to better schools, get more years of education, and ultimately get higher-paying jobs. Even within particular professions, such as construction and carpentry, intelligence predicts who will advance more rapidly to positions of power and command higher incomes. In tribal societies, the headmen or leaders are almost invariably among the more intelligent members of the group. If intelligence has been a reliable predictor of economic resources over human evolutionary history, then women could have evolved a preference for this quality in a potential marriage partner. The International Study on Choosing a Mate found that women rated education and intelligence fifth out of 18 desirable characteristics. Ranked in a smaller list of 13 desirable characteristics, intelligence emerged in second place worldwide. Women valued intelligence more than men in 10 out of the 37 cultures. Estonian women, for example, ranked intelligence third out of 13 desired characteristics, whereas Estonian men ranked it fifth. Norwegian women valued it second, whereas Norwegian men ranked it fourth. In the remaining 27 cultures, however, both sexes placed the same high premium on intelligence. The quality of intelligence signals many potential benefits. These are likely to include good parenting skills, capacity for cultural knowledge, and adeptness at parenting. In addition, intelligence is linked with oral fluency, ability to influence other members of a group, prescience in forecasting danger, and judgment in applying health remedies. Beyond these specific qualities, intelligence conveys the ability to solve problems. Some have speculated that intelligence is a marker of good genes that can be passed on to sons and daughters. Women who select more intelligent mates are more likely to become the recipients of all of these critical benefits. To identify some of the actions that intelligent people perform, my lab asked 140 men and women to think of the most intelligent people they knew and to describe five actions that reflected their intelligence. Their descriptions of these five types of actions imply the benefits that may flow to someone fortunate enough to choose an intelligent person as a mate. 1. Intelligent people tend to have a wide perspective and to see an issue from multiple points of view, suggesting better judgment and decision-making. 2. They communicate messages well to other people and are sensitive to signs of how others are feeling, suggesting good social skills. 3, they know where to go to solve problems, implying good judgment. 4, intelligent people manage money well, suggesting that resources will not be lost or squandered. And 5, they make few mistakes in accomplishing tasks they have never before attempted, suggesting an efficiency in problem solving and allocating time. By selecting an intelligent mate, women increase their chances of receiving all these benefits. Contrast these benefits with the costs imposed by less intelligent people. Their behavior includes failing to pick up subtle hints from others, missing a joke that everyone else gets, and saying the wrong thing at the wrong time, all of which suggest a lack of social adeptness. Less intelligent people repeat mistakes, suggesting that they have less ability to learn from experience. They fail to follow simple verbal instructions, fail to grasp explanations, and persist in arguing when they are obviously wrong. This behavior implies that unintelligent mates are poor problem solvers, unreliable workers, and social liabilities. Ancestral women who preferred intelligent mates would have raised their odds of securing social, material, and economic resources for themselves and for their children. Since intelligence is moderately heritable, these favorable qualities would have been passed on genetically to their sons and daughters, providing an added genetic benefit. Modern women and most men across all cultures hold these preferences. Compatibility. Successful long-term mating requires a sustained cooperative alliance with another person for mutually beneficial goals. Relationships riddled with conflict impede the attainment of these goals. Compatibility between mates entails a complex mesh between two different kinds of characteristics. One kind involves complementary traits, or a mate's possession of resources and skills that differ from one's own in a kind of division of labor between the sexes. Both partners can benefit from specialization and division. The other kinds of traits crucial to compatibility with a mate, however, are those that are most likely to mesh cooperatively with one's own particular personal characteristics and thus are most similar to one's own. Discrepancies between partners in their political orientation, religious views, moral values, hobbies and interests, and even personalities can produce strife and conflict. The psychologist Zick Rubin and his colleagues studied 202 dating couples over several years to see which ones stayed together and which broke up. They found that mismatched couples tended to break up more readily than their matched counterparts. The 103 couples who broke up had more dissimilar values on sex roles, sexual attitudes, romanticism, and religious beliefs than did the 99 couples who stayed together. One solution to the problem of compatibility is to search for similarity in a mate. Both in the United States and worldwide, men and women who are similar to each other on a wide variety of characteristics tend to get married. The tendency for like people to mate shows up most obviously in the areas of values, intelligence, and group membership. People seek mates with similar political and social values, such as their views on abortion and capital punishment. People also desire mates who are similar in race, ethnicity, and religion. Couples desire and marry mates of similar intelligence. In addition, similarity matters in personality characteristics such as extroversion, agreeableness, and conscientiousness. People like mates who share their inclination toward parties if they are extroverted, and toward quiet evenings at home if they are introverted. People who are characteristically open to experience prefer mates who share their interest in wines, art, literature, and the culinary delights of fine foods. Conscientious people prefer mates who share their interest in paying bills on time and saving for the future. Less conscientious people prefer mates who share their interest in living for the moment. The similarity within compatible couples is in part a byproduct of the fact that people tend to marry others who are in close proximity, and those who are nearby tend to be similar to oneself. Similarity of intelligence in modern marriages, for example, may be an incidental outcome of the fact that people of similar intelligence tend to go to the same educational institutions. The incidental outcome explanation, however, cannot account for the widespread preference that people express for mates who are similar. In a study conducted on dating couples in Cambridge, Massachusetts, my lab measured the personalities and intelligence levels of 108 individuals who were involved in a dating relationship. Separately, the couples completed a questionnaire that asked for their preferences in an ideal mate on the same qualities. The study found that women preferred mates who were similar to themselves in many respects.